Welcome to the Wild West Podcast, where today I'm excited to welcome my guest, big wave surfer Grant Washburn. Grant lives in San Francisco, and he's one of the OGs at Mavericks, that famous surf break in Half Moon Bay that has been known to deliver some of the biggest waves on the planet. Grant's been surfing it for over 20 years, and he's as tied into the local surfing culture in San Francisco as anybody. Big wave surfing really gets going in the winter, and with the season changing, I wanted to get Grant for a minute to talk to him about a bunch of stuff happening in the local surfing scene right now. There's the Maverick Surf Contest, which has been running on and off for the past 20 years, and it lost its host organization earlier this year, and so for now, it's unclear what will become of the future of that event, which draws surfers and viewers from around the world. And then recently, San Francisco's 50-year-old surf shop called Wise announced that it was closing. And that follows in this trend of struggling retail establishments in the era of Amazon and home delivery, but it still felt like a blow to the San Francisco surfing community here. And then there's this relatively young organization called the City Surf Project in San Francisco that's teaching at-risk kids and teenagers in the city to surf, and it's connecting them with surfing mentors. And that's an interesting project that Grant has kind of been involved with a little bit. Grant's home surfing break is Ocean Beach, right there on the western edge of San Francisco. It's notoriously gnarly with these rip currents and pounding waves, but it's also a consistent spot. I mean, you can usually surf it year-round. And it's that break that has nurtured the local surfing community for the past 70 years.
That's another thing that surfers are attracted to, is that this is a rough place, and just even to get a couple on any average day is actually a pretty big accomplishment. And when you come in, you feel really exhilarated from that.
Grant and I got together at Sutro Heights one morning recently to talk about the state of surfing in San Francisco. The park overlooks Ocean Beach. We sat on a park bench together with some coffees and just started talking. A storm was just clearing up and the swell was pumping, but nobody was out surfing. It was pretty rough. So we got together and talked before Grant was going to go out for his morning session. So let's get into it. Here's my conversation with big wave surfer Grant Washburn. Welcome to the podcast, Grant. How's it going?
It's going good. Thanks for having me.
This is the perfect view of, you know, north-south, like all of Ocean Beach. And you can really see the breaks unfolding all the way and the potato patch.
Yep, the outer bars.
Yep. Outer bars, thank you.
Which are breaking, which is pretty, it's not common even in the winter. Like most of the days, especially at high tide, it wouldn't be this big. So it's actually a huge swell today.
And yet, there are no surfers out today. At least not yet.
Yeah, there probably won't be too many people here at Ocean Beach. There's a few of us are going to try to surf later, but the storm came through last night. It was really ugly. So the ocean is just starting to settle down. And it looks nice from way up here, but those giant waves are actually pretty bumpy still.
But doesn't the fact that there is nobody out here attract a certain type of like hardcore surfer who lives, you know, on the Great Highway and only wants to come out when the waves are gnarly and there's nobody around?
Yeah, absolutely. And that, I mean, it's neat for me. This is what I love about surfing, is this kind of frontier. If you're out there right now, you'd be the only person and nobody would be able to see you. You'd be as far off into the wilderness as you could get and really have that experience. And when I grew up in the East Coast where I learned to surf, it was so rare to even get that kind of feeling, and mostly just because you'd go somewhere that there aren't any other surfers, but the waves were rarely big enough to really make you feel like you were out in the mountains or out in the, you know, the wild desert or something. This Ocean Beach has that a lot. This is the frontier.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, if you didn't know, if you weren't in the scene, you wouldn't necessarily think that right on the edge, the western edge of San Francisco, is this like proper surf destination. And it's not really a beginner place. It's for kind of, you know, advanced surfers and big wave surfers also.
Yeah, I mean, that's, people come from all over the world, and on a good day, it's spectacular, and you can get these kind of, you know, magical rides, but most of the time, it's a lot of work, a lot of challenge, and that's another thing that surfers are attracted to, is that this is a rough place, and just even to get a couple on any average day is actually a pretty big accomplishment, and when you come in, you feel really exhilarated from that, so it's not often that it's a really great place to catch a perfect wave, but it's very often that it's a huge challenge and a lot of good training.
Yeah, it has that reputation of being a place where like hardcore surfers want to go because it's cold, it's brutal, it's hard to paddle out. There's no like good there's no easy place to paddle out. There's no nice channel to go to just like go out and check it out and be casual about it. You kind of have to be hardcore in order to surf here. But it also seems like that's, well, so can you just describe basically how surfing works at Ocean Beach, like how it is actually done?
Yeah, well, one of the things that a lot of the sort of premium surf spots and the, you know, famous breaks have a channel on one side and a wave that is breaking in a controlled manner such that you could paddle out next to it and then enter the break zone when you're ready to and catch a wave. And at Ocean Beach, you pretty much have to go through the break zone on almost every day, even on a small day. And if you're unlucky, you can kind of spend half hour, an hour working your way through it. So it's kind of like climbing up the mountain to go ski down instead of the chairlift, which the other surf spots would have. But also sometimes the avalanches are taking you out as you're hiking, and you can sometimes be pushed all the way back to where the little kids are digging a hole right on your feet, and you've been paddling for 20 minutes and you're right on the beach. And so it's that kind of humbling experience, which a lot of us love.
And so you have been surfing Ocean Beach for about 30 years now, is that right?
Yes, it's getting hard to count, but something like that.
Okay.
Not quite, but yeah. And I definitely had no idea what I was doing when I got here. And so as opposed to a person who grew up here and knew what they were messing with, I just kind of dropped in after college and had no clue.
Yeah, what was it like? Do you remember the first time paddling out, or the first couple of times that you surfed here? What was that like?
Yeah, I think mercifully I showed up in the summer because school ended in like June or whatever, and I came out around in July. So the way the seasons work here is the big waves don't come until around in the fall and winter. So no matter what, if you show up in July, you're going to have a little bit of a blessing in the period of warming up.
Uh-huh.
So as it was getting bigger and bigger, and I didn't really know, and that was in 1990, that this was a spot that was going to get giant waves. I didn't know that there was any place in California that got giant waves. Really, I mean, I knew Southern California, I'd seen some pictures, but I'd never seen any pictures from around here of any real waves, any good waves. And yeah, sure enough, it was like 15-foot faces one day, and I said, gosh, the waves are big. And some guy in the parking lot next to me said, what, did you just get here? I said, yeah. He's like, wow, this is nothing. I'm like, what do you mean nothing? He's like, oh, it gets way bigger than, you know, way bigger. And I didn't, you know, 15 to 20-foot faces was pretty big, I thought. And,
yeah.
And he was saying, no, it gets way too big. Which is a thing I'd never heard of. Too big. It gets too big right in front of my house.
Huh.
Yes. Really? When's that happen? Soon. Okay. Yeah, I want to see that. So we didn't know. I mean, I didn't know. And sure enough, it happens. It gets to be 50 and 60 feet out here. And today, those, like I was saying, these waves that are breaking out here are easily 30 to 40 feet in the middle there.
Yeah. In that time that you've been out here, that you've been surfing, we were just talking a minute ago about how the scene overall has changed, and it's kind of evolved from that smaller group of more hardcore surfers to a lot more, a more like diverse crowd of all different levels. So what does that look like today? Like on a good day, on like a sunny day when there's a little bit of a swell and the waves are breaking, I mean, there are hundreds of surfers who are out here.
Yeah. And another thing that happens here is when the waves are really small, Ocean Beach gets a disproportionate amount of energy. It's actually kind of a magnet. So what's making the waves really big here today, bigger than most of the coast, is also going to make the waves bigger on a small day. When other places are too small to even surf, Ocean Beach a lot of times will still have some waves. And so it's actually not a bad place to be a beginner, because there's surf all the time. And in the East Coast, you have months at a time where there's no surf. So It's hard to learn to surf when there's no waves at all. There's always waves here, always. And in my 29 years almost, I think I've never seen an unsurfable day as far as the size of surf. Like in the East Coast, if it's waist high, that's swell.
Yeah.
It's always waist high here. In
fact,
it's almost always head high here. But there's lots and lots of kids learning. There's families. There's, you know, more women than ever. Old people, young people. So where it used to be kind of, 20 to 30-something men, it's a cross-section of sort of everyone now, or a lot more broader than it was. And if it's done safely, if you have good wetsuits and someone knows what they're doing, it's actually really a good activity for kids to learn to be safe in the ocean, get the experience and the challenge. And it's a really healthy outlet for a lot of energy that kids have that aren't otherwise being channeled into something good. So the surfing thing that's going on here in San Francisco and around the world is a great thing for that younger generation.
You know, is there anything specific about the way that the scene has evolved in San Francisco that has diversified the surfers who come here, or do you just feel like it's part of that, you know, that broader global trend of more people being interested and exposed to being interested in surfing and exposed to surfing in general around the world because of the commercialization of it, because of whatever you want to look at, the competitive circuit, because of the apparel, because of media in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably the surfing's greatest marketing ploy is that it's really fun and people can see that.
Yeah.
So at the youngest levels, you see, you know, like a dog running on the beach. I mean, they just love it. And kids love the water. People love the water. So surfing doesn't really need it. Exposure is what, you know, attracts a bunch of people to it. It's not necessarily that it's being, you know, modeled one way or another. I think to me, when you introduce kids to it, whether they're inner city kids or kids that grew up on a beach, or you know, a little kid is from Hawaii and, you know, like born in the tide pool, you see that natural connection and the stuff just grows. It speaks to people in different ways and they have their own, you know, way of approaching it. But it's really, really a special relationship between a person and the world. And that's what makes it grow.
We'll get back to my conversation with Grant in just a moment. But first, let's take a quick break. You know, we were talking a minute ago about how the technology has changed and the gear, the equipment is as good as it's ever been, as cheap as it's ever been, and the availability of things like surf cams have made it easier to check the conditions, and so it just makes for a really easy like entry experience for new people, for beginners.
Yeah, and in particular, like a huge difference between when I moved here and now is the quality of the wetsuits. And if you can picture, like, there are people around that still were around before wetsuits. Like, you talk to some guys that surfed here. If there's no wetsuit and the water's 52 and the air is whatever and it's cold, you're not going to last very long. And it's pretty treacherous.
Yeah.
So the wetsuits have gotten really, really good. It's super comfortable. It's much safer to be in the water. An inexperienced person who doesn't have a wetsuit on is in a lot of trouble here, even on a small day. So most of the actual tragedies in the surf are usually small days when it's kind of nice and warm and people get lured into it. It's rarely a big cold day that gets somebody off guard. So it's the wetsuits have made it easier for everyone to get out there. The softboards have made it. It's easier ride to get onto a wave, to stand up. It's safer because you're bumping into each other and you don't go to the hospital every time.
Yeah.
You know, in the old days, a lot of boards didn't really work very well and they were really sharp and pointy and full of things that you wouldn't want as a parent to put your kid into. But now you can set them up in a way that's pretty soft and pretty friendly and they can learn the ropes without, you know, all the bumps and bruises we used to get. And like for me as a kid, it's funny, but we had true bungee cord leashes. So the leash was literally that rubber.
Uh-huh.
And so when you fell, you knew that thing's coming back. And it was like sketchy. The pointy tail and the pointy back of the fin is coming right back at you every time. It was like crazy. So you'd be way better off without a leash. But that's what they were doing in the 70s. And, you know, so anyways, yes, it's a lot more user-friendly. It's a lot more approachable for a lot of people. And these areas that were pretty much off limits are now open for, you know, fun.
And surfing has that reputation of being a sport that attracts like where each surf spot can attract a hardcore group of locals who are very territorial. And Ocean Beach definitely has like its hardcore group of locals, but it doesn't seem like it has that territorial vibe. What do you think?
You know what? They're probably all gonna be mad at me. the Ocean Beach is a big spread field, but there's definitely really intense areas where the waves are really good, and only the best surfers, you know, are gonna be able to make the most of those sections of the beach. And so, when people are sort of wandering around out here and aren't aware of what's going on, it's frustrating. And there are a lot of crowds now, so you know, part of learning to surf is learning the rules of the road, when it's your turn, when you should stay out of the way, when you're in over your head, and all that stuff is good for everybody to be aware of. But I think that because it's not such a perfectly groomed, easily accessible spot, that's one of the things that helps it. You know, it's just so rough and raw that, you know, if you don't want to be around people, you don't have to be most of the time.
Yeah. And I was here the other day. I just, my girlfriend and I biked over across the city on like a sunny morning, just to check out the waves. And we came over and it was a perfect day, blue skies, nice, clean waves, ton of surfers in the water. And one of the things that I saw out here that I hadn't seen out in Ocean Beach before were kite foilers, just going back and forth, like, behind the break, essentially, which was awesome to see. And I know there's kind of a local, like, windsurfing and kite foiling scene in the Bay, but I just wonder if you could talk about, like, how the scene here has expanded beyond just, like, traditional surfing.
Yeah, and it's not just here. You know, it's kind of the world over, but within... you know, not too recent history, there was no way to get in the surf zone except for with a surfboard. And then there was a few exceptions with windsurfers, which are mostly the best, you know, most adventurous windsurfers, would be able to do it some of the time under certain conditions at some of these breaks. But most of the time, there wasn't any real way to be in the surf zone, let alone surf or catch waves or ride around in there without a surfboard. Now there's lots of different ways. The paddleboarding, the kiteboarding, the kiters can go in places that the windsurfers didn't, and pretty much have a great time. And then the foil is a completely different thing, which is almost impossible to imagine even very recently, that people could just jump off a dock in a flat water and start pumping like a skateboarder. And the thing they're on is like a little wing, like a boomerang, and they never touch the water. And they could go around in flat water by just hopping and then come back to the dock and never get wet. It's like, basically, how did they do that? So that's something. When you get one of those things near a wave, it's kind of off the charts as far as where they can go and what they can be on. They can just ride blue water lumps for miles and miles in the open ocean. So who knows what that's going to do? But yeah, the paddleboarding is up and down the coast around areas that we didn't used to surf. Wave riding has changed in so many different ways. So there's people pushing all those little avenues, and it's really, you know, it's pretty neat to watch.
Yeah. Have you ever tried kite foiling?
I'm afraid of all that stuff. I didn't want to kiteboard. I did some windsurfing, and I was like, yeah, this is fun, but I don't want to buy all that stuff and fill my garage with a whole new set of boards.
Uh-huh.
And when the kiting first came out, it looked like I could get hurt. And now I see the guys, you know, it's much safer than it was the first couple of years, but I kind of made a choice. Like, I'm a one-trick pony.
Okay. So I wanted to switch gears real quick and ask you about Mavericks, which people know is the big wave break off of Half Moon Bay that has had a surfing contest for the last, I guess it's been about 15 years, but it's been on and off. And most recently, the World Surf League picked up the Mavericks contest, but then earlier this year dropped it after a couple of years when the contest failed to come together. And there are all kinds of permitting issues and scheduling problems and all kinds of factors that go into the difficulty of hosting the contest. But now I wanted to ask you where that stands. Is it kind of on hiatus for the time being?
It's definitely on hiatus this year. So I'm not really sure what the long-term vision is for whoever's trying to put it together. There's definitely different groups of people that would think putting it together one way or another. But, you know, times have changed in a way that, you know, when we first had those events, there were really very few people that were surfing Mavericks on the biggest days. And most of those guys were all in the event. Now, and the way the World Surf League, the way it kind of unfolded was there was going to be a lot of people that had never really been to Mavericks that were going to be in the event.
Right, they're just big wave surfers, right?
Yeah, they got their points in other parts of the world at other events that the Mavericks guys weren't in, and now the Mavericks event didn't have a lot of people that surf Mavericks in it, so it was getting kind of weird. It's always been an interesting thing. You know, competition is a natural part of any of these sports, and especially something like big wave surfing, but it's only a part of it, and there's a lot of people that participate in the sport and push Mavericks without events and don't care about the events and don't like the events. And then there's some people who would think of it as a certain way and some people a different. And so anyways, it's hard to get consensus even amongst the small groups of people that are out there. And now it's a much bigger group. And then, then there's all the money. And, you know, are they trying to do it for the community? Are they trying to do it to make a bunch of money for one person or for one group? Or, you know, so then people would support it based on that. Like if it's for, you know, one thing, it would be supportable, but if it's something else, no way, you know, and that's how people look at it.
Yeah, what do you think it is about? This has been the same, we've had the same conversation about Mavericks like for the last decade or so. So what do you think it is about the contest or about the spot that makes it this way, that makes it so difficult for people to figure out?
Part of it was, who's the motivation between, you know, who's got the permits and who's trying to run it and under what conditions are they going to run it? And a lot of them, whoever that would be, attach a bunch of stuff to it that they need to make it worthwhile.
Uh-huh.
And so when the day comes, if all that stuff's not in place, it's not worth it for them. So
right.
Having all the infrastructure for a giant webcast or having a beautiful sunny day on a weekend so that they can have a big crowd.
Yeah.
And if it's not that, they don't want to do it. So when you start looking at it from a server's point of view, it's pretty easy to go, hey, pick a big day, let's go.
Yeah.
Oh, but that's a day when they wouldn't be able to, you know, justify running it or whatever. So it's hard anyway, because if you just had Mother Nature making it, it's hard. But then you have all the other stuff that gets attached. And I think that's really kind of why it hasn't happened as much. And that's why it's in a gray area now.
Interesting. But in the meantime, it's not like people aren't surfing Mavericks, like you said. Like people still, the people who live around here are still going out there all the time, from what I understand.
Yeah. So, you know, the almost even without fail, the best wave of the year and the biggest day of the year weren't the year of the event day.
Right.
You know, even when we had the event and whatever, who was running it was really ready to rock and pick it up on the best day of the year, it usually, you know, something that happened next week or the next month, and that would have been the best day. Or you passed up a day that you thought wasn't going to be good, and that would have ended up being the best day, and the rest of the year tanks on you. So, you know, big days are out there, big, great rides, great accomplishments. All that stuff happens every year, every swell, anyhow. And the contest is just one thing to kind of, you know, celebrate what that is, but it gets sometimes off track a bit, and that's why people are sort of indifferent.
And so we hear, I feel like the only times that I really read about Mavericks are in the context of the contest and where it stands. But since you've been going out there the last couple of years, what have you seen? Is it just a handful of people who go out there? Like, what's it looked like the last couple of years?
You know what? No, I think the contest itself can, depending on how they're running it, have a big effect or not. Last year, actually, when the World Surf League was kind of, the list was sort of set and they were kind of not really promoting it or doing anything. So it was, you could kind of tell they weren't that into it last year, but that kept it really low key. So as far as the event, you know, putting pressure on the lineup, there wasn't much, but there's a lot of pressure out there anyway, because there's so many good surfers. And on the best big days, some of the greatest surfers in the world are like focused on getting here. And so that part is just every bit as intense, if not more so, and has nothing to do with the contest. It's all about them doing their thing, which is kind of a neater way to watch them pursue the dreams, you know. But when the contest was like, okay, we're having tryouts, and every Wednesday or, you know, anytime there's waves breaking, we're out there with a score sheet keeping taking names, that affected it, you know. So it made people act a little crazy.
Yeah.
And then what's the criteria? Oh, whoever has the best wipeout, we're going to put them in the contest. Well, if that's what you're going to use, then you're going to change the way people play. If it's sort of an open-ended, you know, who's the most respected, who's making the best waves, then the surfers, that's what they try to do. If it's really, you know, blow yourself up, there's some guys that will do that and for just to get in or whatever, just to make a name.
I feel like, you know, as recently as a few years ago, big wave surfing felt like it was poised to kind of take off with the World Big Wave Tour and just the interest in it. And now, with Mavericks getting off the tour and the tour kind of the Big Wave World Tour kind of falling apart, it seems like there's maybe, it just feels like there's been a little bit of a shift in how people are looking at big wave surfing.
No, you know what? I think there's always the drive for those guys that are on the edge of pushing the limits of the sport. They're just every bit as driven. You know, I don't see the events have, you know, the whole whatever collapse of the WSL Big Tour. I don't think that changes the approach of those top guys. There's a bunch of people that would have loved to have been in the events and in any of these spots. There's a bunch of young kids that grew up seeing the events and like sort of that was their dream.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, when you look at it that way, you feel bad for those guys, because that was something that they just, you know, something that they wanted to do. I would hope that they find that outlet, you know, in there, the way the people like Shane Dorian and you know, a bunch of the kind of soul surfing big wave guys, Cole Christensen, and because they don't care about the contest. They were good in them. They could have won them, or they did sometimes, but they don't, that wasn't really dictating their drive or what they were doing. And it's a healthier way to do it. So the big wave tour, yeah, it was a great thing for some people. And in some ways it could be a really special thing if it was done well, but it's not the heart of the beast. And it doesn't really matter if it goes away, because that's still out there. And back to the grassroots is kind of cool for some of those events. You know, and the WSL model wasn't really true to a lot of what a lot of us felt it should have been anyway. So, you know, it's kind of like, okay, good. So now everybody could do their own thing. So we'll see. I don't know. There's opportunities there for something to take part, you know, for the events. They're a lot of more independent now, with a lot of local guys are in the events. Most of those events are surviving on their own anyway, and we're around before the tour and after. So we'll see what happens with it. But competition is just a small part. And you know, to me, those best guys and the interest is still there. You know, people love to watch big waves and people love to ride big waves.
Yeah. Most recently in the city, the 50-year-old Wise surfboard shop closed at Ocean Beach, right below where we're sitting right now. What does that mean for surfing culture in the city? Does that feel like a big loss?
Well, it's definitely like one of those milestones, I guess. You know, when I moved here in 1990, and he had it over on Vicente, and it was pretty much a hole in the wall. And I'm not really sure what the prehistory was. You know, there's old pictures from the 80s in there and maybe some before that. But it was always around. There weren't a lot of surf shops in that time. You know, just to get anything for surfing was actually kind of hard. There wasn't a lot of surfers around. So Santa Cruz or South was where you sort of would go to get that stuff. And it grew. It became a pretty huge shop.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, you know, it was central to a lot of people's experience here for sure over the last 30 years. So yeah, it's sad. I know Bob probably is ready to be done with everything, but you know, it was always here. Now it won't be.
Does it feel like it's part of a, you know, like some kind of a trend or something like that of these old institutions that have been in the, you know, these old surfing institutions that have been in the city and have, you know, sort of come and gone?
Yeah, I wonder, like the retail thing too. I mean, because people will order their wetsuits through Amazon or whatever. You know, you can get stuff delivered. You can get surfboards, you know, at a bunch of different places. So the surf shop, though, does have that other sort of like bookshop thing where people gather there of certain interest and there's certain hangout aspect to it. So there'll probably be surf shops around long after most of the retail stuff is shut up. But, you know, that San Francisco probably won't have another one of those, not the way, you know, Bob's was.
Yeah. In terms of some of the newer pieces of surfing culture in San Francisco, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is the City Surf Project. Have you been involved in that?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. So my daughter's in high school and she was trying to start the surf club at her high school, and there was an issue. There's a bunch of different things, but they have a community service part of their education, like a requirement, and they also had an insurance issue with taking the kids surfing anywhere. And so we hooked up with City Surf, and that was just like a perfect combination where they have a lot of the stuff that the school would need to have a surf club, and the surf club can help City Surf. So it's been a really good experience. It's fun to take inner city kids surfing, but it's also fun to see the older kids learning to teach each other and the younger kids how to go.
Yeah, one of the things that interests me about the City Surf Project that I think is cool is it kind of keeps intact that old tradition of older surfers mentoring younger surfers.
Yeah, for sure. And that, I mean, the City Surf thing is an incredible outreach for a lot of different avenues to get involved in the what's going on in the surf community. But there's a much broader kind of educational aspect to surfing and the network of surfers all around the world. And the like, Brian Keelana is a big lifeguard rescue training expert, trains Navy SEALs and Coast Guard and stuff, but comes over and does stuff with the kids here. And he said, you know, we're separated by the oceans, but we're connected by the water. And those lessons are life lessons. When you go somewhere that you're unfamiliar with, how you assess the risk of the beach, how you pay attention to what's going on, all the things that the kids learn when they get into the surf are things that will help them in everything that they do. The surfers are kind of this network that's sharing this knowledge all around. And you get the little kids hooked when they're young through a City Surf thing and a couple of CPR courses and lifeguarding. Next thing, you know, they train 100 and then there's another 1,000 and it goes exponential. So it's really neat in the last just 10 and 20 years how much the surf community has shared with that knowledge all around the world and really like into the cracks and crevices of places that are falling off the map. And this like little, you know, whether it's Waves for Water, Sustainable Surf, or you know, there's a whole bunch of different organizations of surfers reaching out and changing things. It's pretty cool.
What is coming up in general? What are you looking forward to about this season?
You know what? It was fun. I got back from Hawaii because I did this film festival with old footage and from Greg Knoll in the 50s, and really kind of tying back to why I got into big waves and why I love surfing. And then I came back and there was two good swells here in Northern California. I got to surf Mavericks a bunch of days, and I'm kind of old. I've been out there for a lot of years, and it was just really fun to catch a few and just to forget all about. I just love to surf big waves. It's so much fun. And just being out here with my kids and stuff the last few years, they're surfing now. They're teenagers, and you know, worrying about like them and the bigger waves, but seeing how much fun they're having with their friends, like that's stuff I look forward to. Surfing the big waves, I'm always going to look forward to. Hanging out with guys that are sometimes 20 years older than me and still surfing, like, oh cool, I got 20 more years to do this, you know.
Yeah.
So this, who knows what's going to happen as far as like, you know, Mavericks having a good season or a bad season, or the awards being a great success or not, really, who knows? Doesn't matter. And you know, we're going to all be doing our thing anyway, and you know, looking forward to another season of it, whatever it is.
So you're going to go check out Mavericks later today?
Yeah, I think we're pretty much in there. See, that last storm is passing right here.
Uh-huh.
And then it should, I mean, the wind has turned north, which is puts the bumps with us when we're riding Mavericks the most. If it's south winds, we can't surf it, which was yesterday.
Thanks very much again to Grant for making time to come on the podcast. To keep up with him, follow him on Instagram at Big Wash. That's big with two G's. He's working on a surfing history film project right now that he'll have updates on soon. If you want to follow what I'm up to with California Outdoors Stories, I'm on Twitter at Greg R. Thomas. Or if you've got questions for me or suggestions for who I should bring on the pod next, email me at gthomas@sfchronicle.com. Wild West is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Find us and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And if you like us, please throw us a rating and a review. See you next time.